what was the aftermath like after winning Olympic gold? Like, you have to understand, men's 4x1 hadn't won a major medal since, you know, Seville World Champs. Obviously, there was the issue, Edmonton 2001.
Yeah.
2002, you guys did great, but obviously you weren't part of the team.
No, no.
2003 as well, but then you hadn't had success in the Olympics. Remember Sydney? Mm-hmm. There was an issue with Alan Condon and Jason in the first round. So you guys had just won the biggest medal that you could ever have as a sprinter. So what was it like coming home with that medal? Because you guys were endorsements, TV shows, award shows, popularity, celeb status. What was that like?
Nah, I don't think we ever got there, if I'm honest with you. Don't get me wrong, like, we did bits and pieces. Like, we did the Mobile Awards and, you know, we was invited to Sports Personality and, you know, we was up for Team of the Year and stuff like that. But I think potentially what we could have achieved, I don't think it quite happened, you know. And our story's never been told publicly. It's been told amongst friends, but it's never been told publicly. And for me, as a Olympic gold medalist, I don't really think it was what I thought it was going to be, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know, I think if we won that medal now in this day and age, we would be definitely gone clear. Financially, mentally, physically, all four of us would be in a different situation. And I think the problem was communication.
With what or who?
Four different agents, four different people, four different characters, you know, and just not really coming together as the way we should have come together to tell our story and what it took for us to get there. Because like you were saying, it took a long time for us to actually get there. And then when we did get there, no one expected us to do what we did. You know, talk about the underdog story. That's exactly what we were. You know, I think people were predicting us to win a bronze max, you know, but what we believed that what we could go out there and achieve was next level. You know, the spirit in Marlon, the spirit in Jason, the spirit in Darren. Remember, all three of those guys had their own personal problems. Marlon didn't compete in the individual. Jason was good, but he never made the final like me. Darren had his hamstring injury. And then there was myself that was young and confident. And I think those three guys helped me win that medal just by sticking together as a family and listening to our coach, Steve Perks, you know, and not letting nobody else interfere with what he had to say about going out there and doing what we had to do. There was nobody that thought they was above the team. Even with the reserve guys, we went to lunch together, we went for dinner together. We were united, you know, and we went out there and done the thing. We actually did it, you know. And even when I sit down now and I speak about it, it still doesn't seem like it's real, you know. Don't get me wrong, the medal has definitely been rewarded, you know. It's helped me be a role model to the younger athletes coming up by going into schools and telling my story, you know, in my community. I get a lot of love around here just because they know where I'm from,
of course,
you know? And Yeah. So for me, it's I'm happy with what I've done with in my career. You know, obviously every athlete would love to do more, but remember, I'm from a council estate in Smethwick. You know, most of my friends are in jail or dead. So for me, it's a massive achievement. Do you know what I mean? So
it's a big achievement. Mm. You shouldn't downplay it.
No, of course not.
I think to become an Olympian as a British athlete, even as a sprinter, it's hard enough. Like, look at what you were up against.
Yeah.
And then to come away with a medal.
Yeah, it's mad.
A gold medal.
To that, yeah.
And you got an MBE from the Queen as well.
That was an amazing day, you know, just to spend a day in Buckingham Palace. And
did you meet Elizabeth?
Charles gave us the our MBE.
Okay.
So for me, I didn't get to meet the Queen. But then we got to meet the Queen. I think we had lunch with the Queen in the same year. So
Was that like?
That was nice.
Did you speak to her? Did you curtsy or bow?
I'm a shy guy.
Because you know there's royal protocol.
Yeah, but we was told, whatever you do, don't turn your back. So that's one thing I was conscious about. You know what I mean? But it was, like I said, for me, from where I'm from and to actually end up being in royalty for me, amazing.
So let's just take it back slightly, because you did have an amazing career. You know, there was a lot that happened prior to 2004 as well. So let's take it to 2001 World Champs. It was a great year for you in the build-up.
Yeah.
Had a fantastic performance at the National Championship to the British Champs as well.
Yeah.
But you know what happens in Edmonton.
So Edmonton 2001 was weird because I was 18 years old.
So you were still a junior?
Still a junior athlete. Right. So I had no pressure on my shoulders. I remember waking up and thinking, all right, it's the first round of the 100 metres. Like my coach said, just go out there and qualify. I remember having a cup of coffee with him in the hotel. And he said, just qualify, you know, the first round. Don't be too easy, but just get through it. So I said, all right, then cool, let's do that. I think I ran 10:28. I'm not sure. 10:28, qualified. And I said to him, that felt really, really easy. Like, I had so much more left. So he said, second round, just turn it up a little bit. So I turned it up a little bit, but I turned it up a little bit too much. And I ran 9.98. And then I went back to the hotel room, all excited and, you know, adrenaline buzzing, world junior record, yada, yada, yada. Woke up in the morning to do semi-final and final to then hear that the wind gauge wasn't working and it's not a world junior record. My body was aching from running the night before because I wasn't the athlete to get a rub or cool down. It just wasn't me to do, you know? I was just the athlete just to go back to the hotel room, have some dinner, have a shower, watch a movie, go to sleep. And that's exactly what I did. So I woke up in the morning, I was a little bit stiff, I was sore, my body was hurting, my hamstrings were tight.
So you didn't actually know about the problem with the wind gauge
until the next day.
The next day,
yeah.
So what was going through your mind for the next 12 hours?
Can't believe what's going on.
Because there's four rounds as well. Yeah, back in those days.
Four rounds back in those days.
And you went 9.9. Well, you thought you went 9.9
in the second heat. So, but it wasn't quite that. So for me, emotionally, I was drained. Stood on the start line and I think I ran 10:34 and never made it into the final. Devastated. I remember walking up and Donovan Bailey putting his arm around me saying, listen, yeah, you're the one for the future. I was like, this is Donovan Bailey. I just watched him win the Olympics. What's going on? Do you know what I mean? And
he did say you were the most phenomenal talent he'd ever seen. So there was a reason why he said that.
Yeah, definitely. And he was one of the realists too. One of the realists. Like Donovan Bailey for me was like meeting my idol. Having a guardian angel there, having a mentor, and just being able to be in his presence and listen to his stories. I was like, this guy is a legend, you know? And for him to say that about me, it was very overwhelming. So I came home from 2001 and I trained my tail off. And then in 2002, I ran some of the craziest times I've ever ran in my career. And there was one little guy from St. Kitts and Nevis that troubled me.
Literally.
All year round. Yeah. Mr. Kim Collins.
Mr. Kim Collins, who only just recently retired, like,
me and him became very, very good friends. He stayed with me in London and just before I retired, and we trained together and we were just reminiscing. Kim is a very, very decent guy. And but in 2002, he was like a guy that I couldn't shake, you know. I remember going to the Commonwealth Games up in Manchester and racing him round for round, watching what time he just ran and, you know, just, you know, keeping a very close eye on him. And he was my main focus because I knew how good he was.
So it wasn't Dwayne, because Dwayne was also in the final as well.
Yeah.
I remember you guys were like the poster boys of the event because Commonwealth Games in Manchester, home championship.
I think for me in 2002, I just had enough, you know what I mean? Because I was always seen as the black sheep in it. So I kind of disengaged myself from the British sprinters and just made friends amongst the international sprinters. You know, I was always the biggest threat. So I became the black sheep. So I just decided just to do me, you know. And that year for me, you know, again, I don't really want to badmouth Dwayne. Like I said, I got a lot of love for him. But there was, you know, after seeing him in the indoors and the seeing the size difference, and I was just like, something's going on around here. So let me just focus on me. So
were you aware at the time that something was a speculation, or did you?
There was talks in it. You know, not really from his perspective, just with the athletes that he was associated with back then. I just remember looking at these guys thinking, I ain't never seen a girl that big in my life, you know. She got bigger quads than me, you know what I mean? So for me, it was just one of those situations where I just decided to disengage myself from that and just focus on what I needed to focus on, because I had my own personal issues going on in my life anyway. So for me, it was about, the track was an escape, and I ain't going to make anybody else's problems become my problems. And I just got on with it. Made the final, 2002, Manchester City Stadium. Stood on that start line. Again, I just had that same feeling where I was almost floating when I was walking. Got into my blocks. Had one of the best starts I ever had in my whole career. Got halfway down the track. I was about to step on the gas and I tore my hamstring. 10 centimeter grade 2 tear. Season done. We had European champions later on that month and I had to go home. Me personally, I thought I would have ran sub 10 and probably won that Commonwealth Games, which again would have been amazing for my career, but it didn't quite happen. So I went home. There was a physio that used to look after me, Paula Wild, amazing physio. Got back home, she treated my hamstring. 2003 came, you know, stronger mentally, physically, and then ran 10.04 Paris World Championships. But the build up towards Paris World Champs was amazing, because every race that I raced, I was just season best, personal best all the way through. And it was probably one of the best years I ever had in track and field. Yeah. Then got to Paris, and then we had that situation with John Drummond laying on the track just before my race.
It was an entertaining championships. It was, to say,
man,
the least.
But he messed my race up, man.
So it's his fault.
I blame him. Definitely. Like I said, 2003, I was in the best shape of my life, and you know, I was out there for a good minute, and my hamstring, my mental, my physical, it just was all gone. As I went into the blocks, I knew I was going to run bad, and I didn't make the final. So yeah, thanks, John.
Oh gosh, you've definitely experienced a lot, to say the least.
Yeah, but like, I'm a firm believer, everything happens for a reason, and it, don't get me wrong, there's no hate or any malice against anybody, you know, it's just things happen. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know what I mean? So that's what it is.
Post 2004, you know, off the back of winning Olympic gold, you were then going into a new season as Olympic champion. Yeah. So the first championship you had, 2005, was the European indoor, and you won a silver medal. However, the medal was then taken away due to a failed test of samples of cannabis that were found in your system, which you did explain were due to passive smoking.
Yeah.
You had a public warning, and you had to apologise.
I had to apologise.
And you did have the medal taken away.
Yeah.
What was that like in that moment? What was going through your mind?
It was embarrassing, innit? Because, you know, I'm from a proud family, innit? You know, of Jamaicans, where, you know, if you disrespect the name, you kind of shunned upon a little bit, you know? And everything that I did in athletics up until that point was the first in my family, you know? So for people to hear that and to be like, what are you doing? Why are you burning weed? I'm like, I was in the blues. Everyone was burning weed in there, and my levels on my test was very, very low, you know, but it was in the system. So that's why I got caught. And then it was like, boy, you're too light, man. You're a born weed. But yeah. That's the, and that's the truth of the matter. Do you know what I mean? Until, you know, I just thought to myself, all right, that's a lesson learned. I've got to start watching where I am and what I'm doing. This is really a profession. This isn't no hobby. So it was a massive consequence.
Thank you for listening to a preview of today's show. To hear the full episode, visit www.thehiddengreatness.com.